Welcome to the Tune Shed, the workshop for everything music. Today we're literally in the workshop, and it's me, your host, Blake Murray, with my dear childhood friend, Marty Gray. What's up, Marty?
Oh man, it was a good day today. How are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling fresh. Had a great day yesterday with you working on this song. Excited to recap everything we've done. How are you doing?
Dude, so good. I mean, okay, this is part four of the recap. We have done this four times so far. So this is stage four. Hopefully you guys have really enjoyed seeing the process of this track. Sort of like, just like emerge forth from Blake's brain and his memory.
Wait, isn't this part three?
Is this part three? Oh, it is part three, isn't it? Wow, we've made so much progress in three sessions. That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, so let's give the quick update. So essentially, this is a song. If you haven't heard the other two parts, you got to check them out first. This is a song that Marty and I made together in high school. It's been probably a decade or something. Let's not do the math. And now we're trying to recreate it from memory. But luckily, I was obsessed with the little recording I took on my iPhone, which is now dead and inaccessible. Listened to it a million times. And I have a little bit of a start on what the song was supposed to sound like. And so what we've been doing is I put down what I remembered, and we've been adding a bunch of layers. We're going to do vocals maybe in the next part, maybe in the part after that, and we are just building a song from scratch. So we've done a bunch of work, and we're going to go over what we've done and why we've done it, and yeah, is that everything, Marty?
That's everything. Do we usually start with like a listen through, or do we do that at the end? I forget.
Let's see. I don't know. I think we've probably ended with listen through. So I guess part two probably has one at the end. But maybe it's good for context. I don't know. Want to do listen through?
You know, I like the listen through at the end because we can sort of like take you step by step in what we did, and then we can listen to all of it together at the end. Perhaps. Mm. Perhaps that's
the grand reveal. I like your thinking.
The grand reveal.
I like your thinking a lot. Mm.
Well, okay. What? Let's get into it. What did we start with?
So yeah, I think in the first part, we decided to put like some strings, like some ukulele and some dulcimer up front in the very beginning of the song to introduce us. I think the first thing we were thinking was, hey, let's get some of those instruments throughout because they kind of just disappeared for the rest of the song. So I think we started with a ukulele and you said, let's do something nice with voice leading. And I was like, what is voice leading? so yeah, maybe we should start there.
Sure. Yeah. And for context, voice leading is where the, the way that I was using it anyway was I wanted the top string to sort of like play a little mini melody, and to sort of move through the chords. You'll sort of hear it, but this is what, I decided to sort of comp some ukulele chords over Blake's mandolin. So here's how that sounds. Yeah, you sort of hear that melody going. Nee, nee,
yeah.
Nee, nee, nee. That's kind of what voice leading is all about.
I like it because I guess the way I've always thought of voice listening, I guess a slightly different beast, but you know, chords have, you know, three plus notes in them. So you can play them in a certain order or you can play them in a different order. You can play them in any order you want. But instead of going, okay, I'm moving from chord A to chord B and having all the notes in the same order, you sort of move them around so it like makes sense as you play it.
Yeah.
But I like your description better because really the goal is so it sounds more continuous doing that rather than just like playing block chords and just like moving around awkwardly.
Right. Well, and like block chords have their spot. You know, block chords are definitely fine. In certain contexts, but I think sometimes if the texture is thinner, it's nice to have those little moving notes in there. You know, it makes it more like more interesting, more flavor, a little bit of intrigue. I don't know. Just use your brain. Use your ears. You'll know when to do it.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing about this uke part that's nice is it really, it's like a little moody, which the song overall definitely has a strong sprinkle of moody in it. So it matches the vibe. But overall, I feel like all these instruments like the dulcimer, mandolin, ukulele, they're kind of light and upbringing at the same time. So it's like kind of a lovely little dissonance between those two feelings.
I think so.
I think the part fits really nicely.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we also discussed wanting there to be something on the downbeats. So like your strumming pattern for the mandolin is pretty upstroke heavy. Right? So the ukulele is sort of filling in just the downbeats, and there's a, we wanted there to be a nice interplay between the two. So here's the mandolin and the ukulele soloed. You see how, like, the ukulele sort of comes, like, sneaks in between the mandolin?
Right.
We thought that
was. And then it makes it even more satisfying when they line up, too, because there's a little bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah, right on the downbeat.
And, hey, didn't your phone ding in one of the recordings?
Oh, it did. Let me see if I can play that. I think I remember kind of where it is. There it is.
There it is. That's perfect. We decided to leave that in for context. So I was mentioning that I'd recorded this on my iPhone in high school, and my phone died, which is why we only had a small part of it. And I listened to it so many times, and as soon as your phone dinged, I was like, wait, I remember in the recording my phone dinged during it as well, and then, of course, died a little bit later. So we're leaving it in. That's the Easter egg.
It's a memento. I love
it. Yes, a memento. And it also shows, if we had that recording, we could show the progression of Apple's text ding.
Oh, that's true. Although mine is an Android. I have the poor guy phone.
Oh, it's an Android?
Yeah.
Ah, perfect.
That's awesome. What did we do next? Did we do the dulcimer after that?
Actually, I think we... Oh, maybe we did do the dulcimer. Yeah, let's check out the dulcimer.
Okay. So we had dulcimer in the beginning too, and we decided that we wanted to have more dulcimer throughout. So we started with this like little roll thing before the, I guess what we're calling the chorus. Just like a little B minor rolly thing. And then before the outro, we added a nice, like the same thing, but down. Transitional material.
Yeah. And then we were talking too, like you were saying a dulcimer versus a zither. Can you tell us about what those are?
Yeah, sure can. So a zither is, I believe, any stringed instrument that is connected to specific zither pegs on a flat board over a hole.
Okay.
So it'd be like
strings on pegs over a hole.
Yep. Yeah. So it's there are lap zithers that you play with your fingers. There are dulcimers. You can play dulcimers with little hammers. There are harp steels. There are lap harps. There are all sorts of different kinds of zithers. But I think a dulcimer is a kind of zither, I believe.
Oh yeah. We were saying it's like a square rectangle kind of relationship.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and your dulcimer has 16 strings, right?
Yeah, it does.
So sick. It sounds amazing. It sounds like a full harp sweep, you know, unless you had a harp to listen to right next to it, which I think might sound a little bigger because harps have a ton of strings. It's really gorgeous.
I love that instrument. My favorite part about it is that the side opposite the pegs, what's sort of the fretboard, or the bridge, not the fretboard, the bridge. The bridge is like this curved piece of metal, and the strings sort of like hang over it. They're like bent over this piece of metal. So there's this part where the string doesn't resonate. That's like the short part of the string. And you can depress that part of the string and like bend the strings a little bit. Which is really sick.
So you get this little warpy feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I can just grab it. Hold on.
Yes, I was going to ask you.
Just grab it and do it myself. Yeah, so like, you know the part of the guitar that's really close to the tuning pegs? like after right. the bridge. Yeah, that's kind of the idea here. So when I press on that part, you can do like little ooh. Like you know. You could like do cool. do little bendies.
So it's beautiful. You can almost imitate a harp or I'm spacing on the name of the instrument, but you sit down and you play it and you do a lot of bendies.
Yeah, there's a Chinese instrument. I think it's pronounced a zheng, but it's spelled Zheng, I think. And that's an example of like a string instrument that has like a huge bridge in the middle that you just like bend the note. I know the Japanese have a similar thing, but I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, cool. I just Googled the zheng. It looks really cool.
I've seen a lady play one, and they're super hard looking. It looks so hard to play. It was awesome.
Yeah, it looks like the piece that's the bridge actually moves throughout. Like each string has the bridge placed in a different location along it to get the pitch.
Oh, I wonder if that, that probably changes the tuning of the thing.
And then, of course, you can just play, you can technically play both sides.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, man.
Really cool. All right, we're going off. So we also, with your dulcimer, you did a plucking pattern. Can you maybe play the area of the song that's in so we get some context for, like, why did we add that there? I can't remember.
Sure, you can. So we used to have the mandolin sort of playing out of the outro. Or not, out of the first chorus. So this is right before the second verse. We had the mandolin mm-hmm. playing here. I'll sort of just play that section. So here's like the instrumental into the second verse. So we decided to mute the mandolin and introduce like a plucking pattern on the dulcimer instead.
Oh yeah.
And we sort of like, I played one chord and then the other chord separately and just like smashed them together. So here's what it ended up sounding like. And then we had the mandolin coming in sort of halfway through. Just be the second verse.
Yeah, and I really liked what you did when you did that too. You played each chord twice, found the takes that you liked, and then smushed all of it together so it, you know, it is there's some variation sprinkled within, so it doesn't sound like too robotic.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like two samples just right next to each other.
Yeah, I think we were also commenting that it when we were sort of selecting which takes, we kind of wanted one that sounded a little bit dirty, but in a good way. Like maybe not necessarily off tempo or something, but sometimes a string might, you know, hang a little bit longer before you plucked it again. And that actually adds really nice variation. I think that it's sort of dirty in a good way, we were saying.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't have great dulcimer technique, like finger plucking technique. I just don't have a lot of practice with it. So
sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds good. I like the sound of like the fingers sort of getting in the way a little bit and like your fingernails buzzing on the other strings and stuff. I like that, like just a little crunchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sweet. Should we jump to some percussion?
Yes. Yeah, we did percussion stuff.
We did.
We did percussion.
We did a lot. Actually, maybe we should play the end because this is kind of an interesting thing that we're facing in songwriting where we played some stuff, and then we, in the first episode, so we had this outro. We're not really sure what to do with it. It kind of sounds like maybe junk rock, and we're like, the whole thing sounds junky. We're not really sure if we're going to keep it. Maybe we should play that, because that kind of has inspired our percussion and the rest of the song to be a little bit more junky, and it sort of like guided a bunch of our decisions after that. We play that part that we're like not sure about at the end.
Yeah, the quote-unquote outro or whatever. So
yeah, which we might just delete it, but I don't know.
I'm starting to like it. I'm moving further and further away from deleting this part. It's cool.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's cool. You never know, though. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So The first thing we did was I just quickly time aligned the mandolin chunkings because we had them muted before. So I just unmuted them, looked at them, and just like time aligned the chukka chunka, little like percussive element there. We obviously added that dulcimer thing. We then muted the electric guitar that was there before because we didn't like it.
Okay.
So that that was doubling the bass. We muted that, and then we added a bunch of percussion. So, with that being said, here's how the ending sounds now.
Yeah, so it's like it's becoming closer to the rest of the song because we're sprinkling this percussion throughout. We're actually kind of connecting them. I feel like the vibe's a little bit different still, but it, yeah, and also my mandolin, you know, I just totally made that up. And then you said, oh, let's get that in stereo. So I went back and, you know, like relearned what I made up on the spot and kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
And then you had to play it twice really close together.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know what I played. I have to like, it took me like 40 minutes to do that.
Oh, poor guy. Sorry.
I'm not very good at mandolin. It was actually really fun, though, to sort of learn something that you improvise. It's kind of a fun exercise.
Oh, cool.
So where should we start? There's that paper sound. I think that's the first thing that sticks out to me. Maybe the wobbly one.
Yeah,
first.
Yeah. So we found some random paper samples that I don't think we remember recording them, but we did. They were just sitting down at the bottom and they played when we were working on this outro, and we were like, hey, what are those paper samples? Like, let's put those places. So here's the like a wobbly sample. Just there. So like I copy pasted that sample at a couple different spots in the song. For no reason. Yeah.
I totally love this chaotic creative energy from Marty. Like literally you just copied and pasted it twice and just like dragged it to different random spots.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't know you could do that. Is that I'm like, that's a rule I've never broken before. I felt very freed by that. So good chaotic energy.
Yeah. I mean, if it's just like a random sample that sounds cool and it's this kind of song, like why the hell not?
It adds texture too. Like when that comes in, I'm like, ooh, what is that? You know, like it just grabs my ear for half a second.
Yeah, it gives the track character, I think.
Yeah.
So the
we also did. Wait, one second though. Did we record that? Because we did record a bunch of paper samples.
I mean, they're definitely tracked like into Ableton. I don't remember doing that. It's definitely not a sample, but I don't know. Who knows?
I think we recorded some paper. I guess we'll have to listen back to our own episodes because we took a few weeks off, but no one will know that.
True.
Because they'll come out in order. But maybe we just forgot that we did that. But we have a paper snare, too, that you used. So Dan, our guest, if you haven't checked out his episode, you should. He suggested this shapeshifter plugin, and you're using that to make this snare drum that's really cool.
Yeah. So... I don't have the original paper sample that I used anymore because it just got mangled. I like printed over it a bunch of times, but basically, here's the end result. So that used to be just like me like flicking a paper, and I put it through some distortion, some EQ, a supercharger compressor from Native Instruments on like a really aggressive setting. And then another shapeshifter plugin set to some crazy, like crunchy percussion setting. And then just printed that out and stuck it into a drum rack.
The other thing you did that I never do is you faded the tail of it, which I feel like is maybe an underrated step to sort of keep it short and punchy like a snare drum. So even after all that, you know, all those effects, you really make it
true
shaped like a snare drum.
Oh yeah, here's without the fade. So that's what.
Yeah, that's not quite right.
Yeah, right. So I just like shortened it and just faded it out. You know, made it as long as I wanted.
Yeah, so cool. Oh yeah, should we get to the fun new samples we put in at the end?
Yes.
The matches and the toothbrush.
Yeah, the toothbrush. The toothbrush. So I went pee in the middle of our session, and then I came back with a matchbox and a toothbrush for no reason. Because we wanted to make this last part like junky.
Yeah, I was going to say, once again, chaotic creative energy. I love it.
It's so fun. So, I mean, the matchbox is like full of matches. So we just kind of tracked a match shaker. And here's how that sounds. Oh, I should play it without all the effects that we have. So I double tracked this like matchbox and just played it like a shaker.
Did you detune it or something too?
So what I did was I put a tape station simulator on it. Some crazy guy on the internet made a big Ableton stock plugin chain that emulates sort of like a tape station that you would like throw something through a tape player and make it sound really bad.
Oh yeah.
So it like took a bunch of high end off. It like saturated the hell out of the low end. And introduce some like random pitch wiggles and so here's how that sounds. And then I didn't like how low endy it was, so I just lopped off the low end. And here's what you're left with. Just some like 1K, 2K mush.
It's cool. Yeah, it does the job of a shaker, and it's definitely has a bit of a junk vibe, and yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So then we recorded the match being struck.
Oh.
Put that in there.
So good.
Which is awesome.
Literally fire.
Quite literally fire. And then with the toothbrush, we sort of just tracked one sample of me like turning the electric toothbrush on and off, which at the time sounded like, you know, but then we decided to really like mess up the sound. And so I did the thing again where I just threw a bunch of effects on it and then printed it out. So I think what we did, I automated a formant shifter to go from down to up. So to like change the formant, and then we stuck shapeshifter on it again. Oh no, we used Digitalis this time.
Yeah, we were like, there's like a cat in this plugin that tells you, it's supposed to be like a helpful cat, but it tells you these really confusing statements. And really, I think the lesson in all of this, Marty, what I'm taking away is take your samples, pull random stuff or random plugins, like presets, whatever, off the internet, off your DAW, and just like destroy them, like automate random parts of it and just like do weird stuff and then just call it good.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It somehow works out.
It always does. I mean, bro, if you trust your ears, you can make a whole song out of anything you want. Like, you know, if you just keep if you have enough tools and you keep messing around with stuff until it sounds right, you can find something to do with it. Like, there's no stopping you, you know?
Yeah.
But eventually,
I think if you have a DAW, you have all the tools in the world, really.
I think you do, honestly. Like, man, I've seen some crazy stuff with just stock plugins, like on Ableton and Logic and stuff. It's cool. But after much kerfuffling, here's how the sample turned out. There's just sort of like this digital, like...
Mm-hmm.
We put that... We placed it right before the match hit to sort of, like, introduce it. And here's how they sound together.
Ooh.
It's cool.
I love that. It sounds really cool to me.
Yeah, me too. It's sort of this like little impact in the beat.
Can we listen to it in context with maybe just the drums or something?
Yeah, so here's the drums soloed from that spot. Here it is, and... It's cool. It fits in there nice.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's the perfect transition to some more chaotic creative energy in the pots and pans kit that you made.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I had forgot, but I, one time years ago, I just like grabbed all the pots and pans from my kitchen and just started like hitting them with drumsticks and like mallets and stuff. And just like scraping them. And I recorded one big long sample and then later broke it up and stuck it on a drum rack and made an instrument out of it that you could play with like a touchpad or launch pad or something. So I could just play it right now, you know? So here, I mean, what I made was literally like this giant, like, I'm just pressing random buttons.
Here is the junk vibe, finally, the culmination of it all.
Right.
It's the kitchen sink approach.
I just recorded a bunch of it. So, like, then in one take, I just sort of recorded that instrument over the ending and just pressed random buttons on the launch pad to make, like, kitchen noises.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, here's an example of, like, one of those areas. You know, just like random pots and pans being hit.
Yeah. And again, I think you, like, my lame joke, but you threw the kitchen sink of plugins at it too. Didn't you put little Altar Boy on it to mess with the pitch and sort of randomly automated that so, you know, all the different kitchen sink sounds sound different?
Oh, I totally did. I forgot. It looks like I have Supercharger again set to a really aggressive setting, so everything sounds like really compressed and shitty. And then the little Altar Boy plugin. Yeah, I automated the formant randomly on each of the little like hits. So they would come through like a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, so this I just randomly automated the formant on each of the hits. So like this is a really high formant. And then this is a really low one.
Yeah, cool.
Just like whatever, you know.
Adds character. Yeah.
Yeah, it adds like randomness.
It's
love it.
And this whole stage right here of adding, like, essentially our goal was to bring out that junk vibe throughout and also in this little end section. But it's kind of funny, it's a piece of the songwriting process I feel like I don't do enough because I want to get on to something like vocals at this point. But I think it's great to add all this texture and character through randomness. Like the timing of these things aren't synced up right. Always, you know, on some things we want them synced up, but on a lot of things we're just throwing it in there and throwing plugins at it and being like, this is a compelling, interesting sound that's going to add dimension to this song. And that was really the goal, but it was so fun to do. It was just, you know, just everything's good, right? You can't do it wrong.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think this sort of process has two benefits, right? Like you said, it adds a lot of dimension and character, but it also sort of like motivates you to keep working on the song because it is so fun and it's really creative and you're just like, you're feeling good. You're making weird decisions. Like nobody else would have ever thought of that. You know, it's like the song slowly mm-hmm. becomes yours through this sort of thing.
Right. Yep. And you know, in recording matches and stuff, that's the kind of memory that's just, it's just kind of fun. It's like, so is there anything else that we added to it in terms of parts? I know we did some arranging, but maybe we should shift gears to that after if we've talked about everything we've added.
Yeah, I think we talked about everything we added. After that, we sort of just looked at the whole arrangement and we sort of made cuts. Like you said, we mm-hmm. cut the mandolin out of the instrumental between the first chorus and the second verse.
Yep.
We also cut out that little Tyrell synth that we had.
Yeah, will you play that? It just got a little annoying, I thought. Or not annoying, but just there's too much of it.
Yeah, this thing.
Yeah.
It's a cool element, but I think it's like, it's pretty domineering. So we cut it out of a lot of the paste. Second verse and the instrumental. We kept it in the first chorus, though. We copy-pasted some of the new percussion elements we had from the outro to the mm-hmm. first chorus.
Like the matches? Did we do the matches though?
Yeah, we copy-pasted the match shaker and also the match plus the toothbrush little impact thing.
Oh, yeah. And you also did some variations. Like, I think on one time through, it's only the toothbrush, or the toothbrush is like the second half of the thing, right? So we only included the toothbrush and skipped the matchbook or something like that, just so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what we did. Yeah, just to, again, not make it so like the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, and some of the paper samples I think we threw around too, and like the wood blocks we copy pasted and just sort of made the whole thing a little bit more whole.
Yeah, yeah, we did copy paste the wood blocks. We copy pasted the wood blocks we had from the first part to the second verse, which is nice.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really cool overall. We did so much to this song, like such a fun and creative session. I guess the one DAW trick I wanted to bring up that you did that I thought was cool, you kept just, you know, chopping things and putting them together. And sometimes when you do that, you get a little popping sound because you chop right in the middle of a waveform. So as the player switches from, you know, one 4-bar loop to the next 4-bar loop, you get this pop. But you have some setting on where it has like a 6 millisecond fade in and fade out auto set when you make those cuts, which I need to figure out how to do in Logic. Because then when you do that, you don't lose any audio content really, that's or nothing perceptible, and you don't get that pop, and that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah, really well said. And Ableton has that option sort of built into its settings when you open it for the first time. So it'll ask you right away, like, hey, some sort of a quality of life thing that we do in all of our sampling, we just like add a 6 millisecond fade in and fade out to all of to every sample that ever happens in this DAW. But you can turn that off pretty easily. You can also set it to different values. I just like 6.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
Handy.
I mean, really, really nice quality of life thing.
Cool. I guess before we listen through, let's talk about what we want to do next time. Are you ready to jump to vocals, or do you think we need more layers?
Dude, I'm kind of ready. I'm like ready to start vocals. I think it'll be super fun to like write a second verse and start tracking like maybe demo vocals, maybe finals. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But definitely.
I'm really excited to see your vocal recording process that we talked about a few episodes ago. What episode was that? What was the name of that episode?
Oh, it was called, what was it called? I don't remember.
Was that Lyric Advice? I think it was Lyric Advice.
No, Lyric Advice was a different one.
No, it was called Work in the Mic.
Work in the Mic.
Yeah.
That's right.
You went through this whole process about how you record and get a good take, and I'm excited to see that and how it morphs to this song too. That'll be really cool. Mm.
Yeah, that is going to be a lot of fun. I'm so excited for vocals for this song. It's going to be great. But then I think after vocals, we'll keep adding layers, I think, and like do little arrangement things, maybe like transitions and stuff. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing working with you, I feel like the arrangement always happens on the fly. It's not like, okay, we've recorded and we have 4 big parts that are all different. Now we need to put them together and arrange. It's like, we are always arranging. Oh, let's just delete a little here. Oh, let's move this around. You know, it's fluid. It's just really quite fun.
Yeah, and it doesn't always have to be like that. You know, like the song can be written beforehand and like all of your arrangement ideas can be pretty solid. But I think like the modern DAW just makes it so easy to like delete 2 measures of everything for no reason. Like whatever, who cares? You know, or like copy paste 2 measures. You know, it's too easy to mess with the arrangement, so might as well do it, you know.
Yeah. Cool. Well, should we, I'm on the fence. Should we play and sort of talk through, mention some things to remind people what sort of we messed with, or just play it and be quiet?
Let's play it and be quiet. I feel like people will want to just hear it.
All right. I don't know. Yeah, I'm with
Could
that.
Could be wrong.
No, I think that's probably good. All right, folks, without further ado, Instinct Cringes in its 3rd draft. Thank you. Hey.
Well, folks.
Cool.
Until next time.
That's a wrap. Yeah, that's a wrap. Much love, everyone.
Peace. Bye.